Hello and welcome to this additional episode of Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin. We're giving you the second part of our great interview with League of Ireland legend Pat Byrne, where he talks about his footballing life, including playing at Bohemians, Philadelphia Fury, Leicester City, one of the all-time great teams in Shamrock Rovers, and managing Shelburne to a League and FAI Cup. If you haven't listened to part one, you can go back and listen to that first, all about his early childhood and how he developed in the game. Remember to share the show on your social media channels to spread the word about the history and heritage of Irish football on the island. Now, back to our interview with the great Pat Byrne. And in this episode, we'll be talking about his part in the great Shamrock Rovers side, managing Shelburne to the League of Ireland title, and why his most favourite managerial success might just surprise you. But we'll pick up where we left off in the last episode, where Pat was talking about his time at Hearts Football Club in Scotland.
And you had your time then at Leicester City, you get promoted. What happens then that you find yourself going north of the border up to Scotland to play for Hearts?
Yeah, my contract was up, and there wasn't much things happened, to be honest. And I got an offer from Hearts because a friend of mine had gone to play for them, and he said, like, would you be interested coming up? So I said I would, and went up, met the club, sorted out everything, and we moved to Edinburgh, and beautiful place. But it was odd. My first game, I'm playing for Hearts, and I'm in the tunnel, and here's this sort of saying, you make, and I didn't know what he's on about, you know, and I haven't a clue. So naive. And I said, I'm waving back, and yeah, how are you, and things like that, you know, you make, you know. And my name's Pat, what's on about Mick, you know? And I said, I said, one of the lads next to me, that's NIAB I was. I said, well, no, Pat, that's a Catholic. I was, oh, okay, fair enough. I say no more. So went out, and people don't care what colour you are, what you do, doesn't matter what you are, what religion or anything. Once you go out and you play for their team, and you give your, you know, 100% every week, they will like you, regardless of who you are, what you are, what kind of religion you might be. And I've learned that lesson over the years, that they just want you to give the best for their club. And Hearts was a very, very... I loved the club. I actually loved it. I had a weird time there, unfortunately, but even though I had great times, fabulous club. But my one thing, I don't know what my one thing that happened to me was, it was during the Troubles, and my wife got a phone call. I don't know how they got my number, and there wasn't a nice thing said about things. So that's when I decided to leave, because I wasn't happy what happened. But I used to fly back and forward every week to play for the club, because I loved that and I wanted to see my contract.
So your wife, you were living in Dublin at the time, were you? And you were going over on the boat? Or?
We were living in Edinburgh.
Okay.
We had two children, and we were living in Edinburgh, and it was brilliant, and the people were fantastic. But we got a phone call. My wife got a phone call. I was at training one day. And about the Troubles, and she was a bit nervous and things like that, so we decided to come home. But I did say I'd stay to the end of the season, I'd see out my contract, and so I used to fly back and forward. I might have to stay over a few days if we were playing on a Saturday and playing on a Monday or Tuesday. I'd stay over and train with the lads and things like that.
How do you react to something like that? Because it's one thing to, you know, get abuse on the pitch, et cetera, you can kind of run it off, but then it becomes deeply personal, and it becomes a very different kind of situation. So how did you deal with that? Because it must have been exceptionally difficult on an emotional level.
Was, yeah, and it was very upsetting. But the club are great now, in fairness. They took, made sure everything was, it was some crank, I imagine. So I don't know why, because the season was going well. We were doing everything was going well. I was playing well. Everything was going okay. It wasn't as if like my performance was bad, because I won player of the year at the end of the year off one of the clubs. So it wasn't that. If you're playing bad, you might say, well, okay, do you want to get rid of you? So that's the way of getting rid of you. Somebody out of the office would have rang rather than that. But it was just, it was a weird one. And we made the decision. And unfortunately, you know, I didn't want to leave. I loved Edinburgh. And we had a lovely apartment there and everything else. So we had great times. The kids were with it. Kids were there as well. So it was... It was sad in some ways, really. Yeah. But I still love the club, and you know, I love the club.
Really, because... It's interesting because we had Pat Finlan on as well. We interviewed him, and we were talking about the teams that he's played for as well. And he said that the team that he loved to play for most was Linfield, up in Belfast. And obviously, Linfield would probably be something similar. It would be very kind of. You know, Protestant orientated kind of club, and yet he felt it was great to be there. People welcomed him, you know, and when he, you know, obviously when he started scoring and he was playing well, etc., they loved him there, and they still talk about him there. So it was interesting that you both had kind of similar views, that the club that you ended up that people thought you might find the hardest, you ended up loving the most.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with Pat, because the amount of fantastic people I found at the club and everything else of that, and the times we had, it was, you know, it was probably one of the most enjoyable times of my football. Things were going well on the pitch, and it was just that situation that happened, and it was just, unfortunately, it was too.
Too much.
I didn't want to take a chance. Maybe the best. Yeah, it was too much. Yeah, probably was. Yeah, and didn't want to take a chance.
So that opens the window then for you to move back. How did you end up then at Shamrock Rovers?
I'd been training with the lads in Rovers when I was playing for Hearts. Rovers let me train with them, which was very good, and I was up there training, so it was great. And so I got to know most of the lads anyway. And then when it materialised that I was coming home, Jim McLaughlin then just took over, and Jim then asked me, would I be keen to sign? I said, yeah, whatsoever. And that means I'd met all the lads, I knew most of the lads, and it was great. And then you wanted the same thing. There, it must be, you know, I love playing on good pitches, and when I saw Milltown and pitch the way it was no brainer really. It was fantastic, and the history, the whole thing, the club, and everything else like that. So, but this was the worst thing was when I signed for Rovers, and my uncles didn't talk to me at all then.
There's a history of you pissing off your family when you signed for Dublin clubs. I've noticed.
It is okay, yeah. It is, yeah. So it's amazing when things go. It did go full circle then when I went to Shell, so it was okay. But it was
You know, I just wanted to ask about Jim McLaughlin first of all. I mean, you know, you mentioned earlier about Billy Young at Bowes, and how he didn't pick you and he didn't get you at the club unless he wanted you to do a job, do something for him. Jim McLaughlin, arguably, if not, maybe there's no argument about it, the greatest League of Ireland manager of all time. If he asked you to come in and he asked you to do a job for him, I mean, it's a bit hard to turn it down. What was Jim like as a manager, and what did he bring to you as a player? Maybe that probably. Maybe you hadn't felt before that you'd played before.
I suppose I wanted to challenge, first of all, because Roberts hadn't won anything for a long time, really. That was one thing with me, myself, but because it was such a big club, but also because of Jim's persuasion, and like, I remember it coming, and he had to have a cigarette, you know, I mean, he was having a cigarette, and you knew when he had a cigarette, he was kind of thinking in his head, and he had, you knew there was, you knew he was serious, for a better word. So I met Jim, and sitting down, I had a cup of tea, that's all we had a cup of tea and a biscuit, and talking away, and he said, would you be keen to come? I said, look, I'd love to, yeah, man. And he says, like, this, that, the other. And I said, great. And he says, look, I want to win things here. Well, I said, so do I. So I said, I'd be delighted to come along. He said, look, I'm going to change things around, blah, blah, blah. And he says, you know, if we can get things going here, this club will be rocking. And you should enjoy your time here. I said, no doubts about that whatsoever. So I said, yeah, I'd love to sign. So there was a few complications then between getting out of my contract in Hearts. They were looking for a few bob, but then it got, it was, you know, Rovers kind of sorted it out because I told them I wasn't going back when I was deaf. And then they would have had to offer me another contract anyway. So it kind of worked out well for both ourselves, both myself and Jim. And so I was delighted to sign for Rovers. So I said to myself, I might as well go to full circle, Caelan. I've been wherever else in Dublin, so except for Pats. I never got to play with Pats. I used to go and watch Pats, but I never got to
I'm sure somebody else in your family wouldn't have talked to you then either.
There was nobody really kind of in Pats, really. I used to go to Pats because we could walk from Walking Sound down to Inchy Core was handy, you know. And then you'd get a lift over the stile, and I'd get in somehow for nothing, you know. So, and it was okay. But I was for Rovers. It was different, actually. It was strange. I might say it's different, but it was different. I don't know, maybe because I was older and I just knew the place was right. You know, that sort of way. You know, you get a good feel for the place. And when I signed, but Jim was so persuasive. But then he also said to me, he says, I have Noel King here and I have him here and I have, and you go there and blah, blah, blah. He was outlining all the people. And he said, look, we've other people coming in as well. I can't tell you about them at the moment, blah, blah, blah. I said, I don't want to know. I said, look, Jim was like Billy Young. Jim picked people for certain positions. And he didn't complicate things. Jim was so simple in his stuff. He'd out and play. He was a mad Liverpool supporter anyway, Jim was. And he just said the same thing as well. Get out and play. If you can play, you can play. You know what I mean? If I buy you to play right full or left full or whatever, that's what I want you to do. Do that. And once you do that, you play every week. And if you don't do that, you won't play. And that was simple. That's how simple it was. But he was great. He was
good or don't play.
He just had it. Yeah. Yeah. You don't play. That's the end of story. It doesn't matter who you are. But the Jim, hardest thing was in the Rover side, Jim's hardest thing was putting somebody back in the team if you were injured, because everybody that played in that side, they could all play. They were tremendous lads. So the worst thing, that if you got injured, that was the hardest thing to get back in the side, you know. He got a great squad together. But he was like Billy Young, same type of way. No matter if you could play, you could play. Doesn't matter if you're 15 or 16 or 29 or 49, he'd play you. That's the way he was.
When you joined, you said when you signed up to join, that Jim said the we'll have this place rocking, etc. Was there any inkling of when you're in good teams, yeah, and maybe it was the kind of the maturity that you were at your own age as well. I think you were probably about 33, 32, 33, something like that. When you joined,
I don't know, I wasn't 33. Excuse me. It's only young player. Fuzzy. So 26.
Did I do my maths? Oh. I got my maths wrong, did I?
And I came back in 80. Was it 82 I came back in?
80. You signed in 83.
83.
Yeah.
So 83. 83. So 83. I would have been 56. So I was, well, 27.
27. Apologies. I gave you 5 extra years.
I can feel a beard coming on my chin there. That
so,
I'm only 69 last week. Did you say?
If it was my maths, you'd be 75 though. So,
you really are. Yeah, thanks.
But yeah,
that'd be awesome.
But did you have any inkling then as to what was to come? Because in a previous podcast when we talked about this team, I kind of described it as probably one of the greatest team, League of Ireland teams of all time, on the greatest trophy run of all time. Was there any inkling when you kind of started off on that run in 83 that this was going to be this kind of massive, incredible team that just won almost everything in front of it?
No, definitely not. I was just hoping to get through the season doing well, because Jim had signed a lot of players, and obviously the onus was on him to, you know, to be successful. Because, like, you know, you had, like, Johnny Joyce I talked about earlier, that took over Rovers, and you assume, like, his knowledge, the people he knew, the success he had, you'd assume that, you know, he would know how to get this thing done, you know, for Shamrock Rovers. But he didn't. And, you know, you had a man, Jim McLaughlin, that the same thing as well. He managed the clubs and the sides and everything else that to success. And here he comes in and he just had a way about getting things done properly and about getting the best out of people. And it's hard to even explain, because he could be very harsh sometimes to some of the players. And other times then he was gentle, you know, what's the best way? Encouraging. Mm. But he was very hard. There was players that didn't get a look in at times, and you know, it was hard for them. Whereas it was okay for us to be playing regularly. It was great because you were enjoying every week and playing the Sundays and playing the games here and there and winning games and things like that. It was great. But there was some players that they expected to play some weeks because they played and he had signed them from other clubs and he didn't probably play as much as they could have or should have probably, you know. But you see, the hardest thing was getting in the side. Once you get in the side and you performed, well, then you stay there. If you didn't perform, you were back out.
Hmm. But is that testament to Jim, though, in that, you know, obviously I wasn't there at the, or anywhere near it at the time, but the signs of good managers is knowing what way players react to different kind of motivations. Some players, you know, need a kick up the arse and that's what gets them motivated, and other players, you need to kind of put them around, an arm around them and say, look, look, hard luck, not this week, but, you know, next week you'll come good for me. I know you will.
Yeah, that's the way it was. He could read a room. He could read a room, no problem. He could read people, no problem. He was fantastic in that respect. And that's where he got the best out of everybody. And, like, when Jim spoke, everybody listened. There was no sort of interruptions or anything else like that. But he would put it across, like John Jones, as you said earlier on, he would put his point across very simple sometimes, and then he would lose the plot sometimes as well. Very rarely, but when he lost the plot, you knew he lost the plot, you know what I mean? And then you'd see him straight back out the door. He'd be going out and having one or two cigarettes before the second half started, you know what I mean? And that's the way he was. He was just, but he just had a great mind about things. At the time, I didn't realise at the time, Alan O'Neill, like, you know, was a fantastic goalkeeper. You know, and he went on to do really well. But the chin brings in Jody Byrne, kind of unknown, you know what I mean? And you're kind of saying, like, how did that happen, you know? And he saw something in Jody Byrne that he felt he was going to get. Alan O'Neill could have easily played for us, easy. But Jim changed it, and that was the end of that, you know? And it didn't really matter who they were. If he knew he was going to, they felt they would do a job for him, you were getting signed. And as I said, he could be very, very, people might say cruel, but he could be very, very kind of harsh when he needed to be, you know? Mm. He'd make the big decisions.
You win the league by 6 points in 83-84, which in old money is when you've only got 2 points for a win. I think it was it's pretty impressive. It's basically 3-1. It's 9 points by modern standards, if you want to put it that way. You come in, you win the league. What were the celebrations like? Because the Shamrock Rovers that we know, the Shamrock Rovers that we know now, the team that's, you know, up there and thereabouts, they're at the top of the league at the moment. They've won, you know, the incredible four in a row as well, from before last season. So, what was it like for Shamrock Rovers to win the league title after quite a while not winning it?
Yeah, it was. I didn't realize, you know, the hunger for the great. It was the people we saw that day, the crying, happiness, the outpouring of celebration. It was just incredible. It was just, I was lucky, as I said, I won things at Bowls, but it was nowhere near that. You know, that sort of way, it was way beyond all that. It was just people being so happy. We were happy too, obviously, but it was a lovely time. It was great celebrations. It was, you know, obviously we thought then, okay, this is the start of hopefully something good, really good, but never thought it would go as far as it did. Mm. Because we used to take one game at a time, and that was definitely the case. So you weren't looking really that much forward, Caleb, you know what I mean? It was always, you were always grounded that way. It was never looked too far ahead, never.
And I suppose it was disguised, I suppose, by the fact that you lost the FAI Cup replay to UCD then as well. It was 0-0 the first game, and then you went, I think it was Talca, and you lost 2-1. And I know you were on the opposite end of it, but in terms of, like, probably one of the greatest upsets in FAI Cup history, and in hindsight, the students coming on, taking on this kind of this powerhouse. What was it like that day? And I've seen video as well. There's some guy, I can't remember who it was, but he at the final whistle, he comes over to you and he gives you a massive, like, hug, as if, you know, they'd won, but he'd played his hero and he'd beaten the team that he'd hero on. What were your memories of that final as well? Because it was quite incredible for them, not for you though.
No, not for us. And that goes back to, as I said to you, when I was 15, I didn't get picked on that team. That was the same hurt I had that day. Not so much because we deserved to, and which we didn't, but more so because we should have, and we didn't play well enough. And that was my fault as much as anybody. And I kind of vowed that day. I said, well, look, that's never going to happen again. And that's never, you know, but it was a harsh lesson. But I learned it as I went along in football. You have to respect other people as well. And they played better than we did. There's no doubts about it. And you see some of the players, Joe Hanrahan and people like that, they went on to do well, you know, even joking to us anyway. But it was, they all went on to do well. They all got good careers, you know, and Keith and... you know, so they had a good side. They really had a good side, and like, fair play to them. But they were great. They were great. Like, it would have been a fluke, people might have said, over one game, but it was over two games.
That's right. Yeah.
And you know, yeah, and he outdid us over two games. So there was no fluke in that. It was a tremendous performance by them. It was horrible at the time, don't get me wrong, horrible. But you had to bite the bullet, and you know, we got over it eventually. But we couldn't wait to go back in pre-season, because that was the last game of the season. Mm. And you had to live with that then for a few months before you went back training. And it wasn't great. It wasn't great at all. But, you know, as I said, you have to respect other people. You have to kind of, you can't win everything, but you hope to win everything. You aspire to win everything, but you, if you get beaten, you just have to accept it. And that's the way life is, you know. It's not great. And thankfully, I haven't had to do it too much, but it's it has to be done, you know, and you have to respect and you have to applaud other teams and, you know, wish them all the best. And they well deserved it, well deserved.
And you certainly did use it as a motivation, because you didn't lose a league or a cup for three more seasons. When you're going through that kind of vein of form, when you're going through that and being with that team, that kind of mentality of, and you mentioned it earlier, of taking that one game at a time and not getting overawed in the moment, was it as simple as that?
Not really, no. I suppose it wasn't as simple as that, you know, but it's we had a situation, like, people think like that, you know, you went on and cruised through everything and everything was great and everything was gorgeous and everything else, but there was a few issues along the way in those other three seasons. Nothing bad now, nothing really bad, but there was times where we all, at different times, people were kind of smelling themselves a little bit, and we were doing okay, and, you know, we're top of the pile and blah, blah, blah. There was a few harsh words at times now between players and things like that, and we weren't always as one at times, but we worked hard at it. The great thing about them, I had to say about the lads, was over those years we weren't afraid to have face to face talk. That was the one thing we probably learned most of everything that season, the fourth season, or the cup final. We learned that we could express our feelings to each other, and you didn't take them as a personal, as a personal thing, really, you know. Mm. But we had to, because you don't win four trophies if, or maybe six trophies, you don't win anything if you're not kind of honest with each other. And the one thing that we always strove to was that we'd be honest with each other. However you may feel, or however you may feel that it's might hurt somebody, it was there was nothing never left unsaid. It had to be said. Mm. We just spent that way
about it. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because we kind of talked earlier about, like, you know, having a word with yourself and how that was important, and perhaps this was maybe the full circle kind of a thing, where it comes back to, rather than the self, now it's the team, and you have to have words with each other to keep that kind of motivation kind of going. And it's interesting as well, because I think when you look at it on a sheet and you go, okay, they won four leagues in the road and they won three FA Cups, amazing, brilliant, there's this sense that this was all rosy in the garden and all you did was win league titles and you all went home happy and stuff like that. And it's interesting that you kind of said, well, actually, you know, sometimes we had to be honest with each other to make sure that we did keep winning.
Yeah, there's another talent of Jim McLaughlin's. Another part of his way of doing things. I remember we were playing on a Sunday and we were training on a Saturday morning. Well, on the Saturday morning, we'd only do a little bit. We went out on the pitch. So we used to play the Tarmacan and we used to have a little five-a-side there in the car park. And I hadn't been happy previous week about certain things that happened. And so I gave Jim the nod and said, Jim, we're going to have a chat with him. Is that be okay? Dermot Keating, myself, and we went in. See, you must remember we had a good lot of leaders in our team as well, which is brilliant. Over the years, and we went in and we said a few home truths to ourselves and we're standing. That Saturday, it wasn't a nice dress room at, we say, 1 o'clock. But by 2 o'clock, it had kind of sorted itself out, you know. But there were still things lingering on the Sunday. You could sense it lingering on the Sunday. But it didn't matter because we were going out to do a job. But over the period of time, everything was sorted out. And there was never a bad word said about anything else then after that. So it just needed to clean the air because you don't win leagues, as you said, you don't win leagues and cups by everything being rosy. That doesn't happen. You know, in a beautiful world, that'd be great, but it doesn't happen. So things had to be said. People had to express their feelings. Where we all had to be kind of honest with each other. And that's why we still remain friends to this day because we can do it. We did that. We were honest with each other and we were respectful of each other as well, too, I suppose.
In the 87 FAA Cup final, you beat Dundalk 3-0. It was a comfortable victory, I suppose, by the scoreline. But did you have any inkling that day when you were lifting that cup above your head, that was perhaps the end of an era? Was there any feeling that was coming?
No, definitely not. We thought like, you know, I'd asked Louis, we were playing down a replay down in Auburn Saigo, and I was walking the pitch and Louis happened to be on the pitch and asked Louis, I said, Louis, is it a case that we're we're going to be selling Milltown? Oh no. And we're going to talk about temporary just for we're gonna have an upgrade or just something that. So I said it's okay. So that's all I'd heard. Didn't want to hear any more, that was grand. So but when it came to the end of the season and then the hurt it caused to all the players as much as all the fans. Like, we were all devastated, you know. Here we were, the one of the reasons that signed for Rovers was our beautiful Milltown pitch. You know, we'd become accustomed to there and it was a fortress for us. And here all of a sudden then we were going and playing Talcott Park, you know, so and then nobody wanted to go and all the problems it caused. But I never thought it was going to come to that. No, never.
So were you originally told that Milltown, Glenmalure Park was fine, it wasn't going anywhere, there was just some work that needed to be get done, and that was what you were told originally?
Initially, and then I was told then they're going to sell it, and when they were going to sell it, there was no way I wanted to play over Talca. If it wasn't your home ground, if Milltown was gone, well then I was gone. And
explain to us what it was like for playing for Shamrock Rovers and asking Shamrock Rovers fans then to go to Talcott Park and the players go to Talcott Park. At the time, the protests from the fans was, I suppose the best way to describe it was vitriolic. It was absolutely damning.
Yeah. And I didn't blame any of the fans. I never did because they came to watch us every week. They supported us through good times, bad times. I know, and we're lucky in great times, but to see the amount of people outside the ground when you go over and you see all these outside and they're not going in, they're not coming in to watch you. And they're wishing you all the best. And they hope we win, but they hope we don't win in some ways too. Because they want to say there's a reason why we're over here, we're not winning. So they want to have some sort of, at least to get bent their anger on that. But I felt so sorry for the people. I mean, so the amount of people I met, and your whole pre-match was out the window, because you were going over there to focus on the game. You've done all your things right. You prepare properly. And then you meet these people that you know really, really well, and you've celebrated with over the years, and you've met them down the country, and you met them in Finn Harps or whatever, Derry or whatever it might have been. And all of a sudden, here we are. And they're not invited inside. You know, there's not. They're not going to come inside. And here we are walking past them as if we're going to the party inside, and they're not going to the party. And it's horrible. Absolutely horrible. And I don't know how they did it. I really don't. And the amount of effort they put in to try, you know, get it quiet and everything else, I still can't believe to this day why somebody, the government, didn't buy it. And you know what I mean? And I know they probably couldn't interfere at that time, but I don't know why it wasn't bought by somebody else and, you know, kept as a stadium, because it was just fantastic. It had so many memories and things like that. Don't get me wrong, Talent is fantastic. Love it and everything else like that. But, you know, we lost part of our soul at that time, you know, because you just loved it. You loved going out that pitch and playing. And you see, people think players are players, but players are, I suppose in some ways, players are performers. So when you know where to perform, you're kind of saying, well, you know, this is not my gig at all, you know. I don't want to be here. And that was the thing that was the worst part. And that was with everybody, really. You know, we all went there, and the worst thing is that everybody went their own ways and broke the whole team. You know, it was difficult.
Yeah, it was like a band breaking up, wasn't it? I mean, it was just this kind of you made this fantastic, beautiful music together, and then all of a sudden it just ends and everything falls apart. Your home is gone. Players then are saying, "Well, I don't want to play here," and team's not the same, and the balance is gone, and players start to move away, and it really did rip the soul out of Shamrock Rovers, didn't it?
I think that's a good way of putting it, actually. The soul, because the soul was gone. That was it. The soul included so many people, mainly our fans, but it also included our players, because everybody eventually went different places, and some of the lads went up to Derry and was successful and proven that the side, if we had kept the side together, we could have gone on and probably done more. But they went on to do really well under Jim and so Jim forth.
Again.
Yeah, and Jim again, you see. And the thing about it was, like, the lads had known how to win leagues, and that was the most important thing. And then when they added a few extra players in Derry, good players like Felix Seely and so forth, that, you know, they went on to win leagues because of the knowledge of the lads that have been with us, and because of Jim as well also.
Yeah.
But it was, the soul was gone that day, or that way at that time. And even now I'm trying to kind of think, I was all over the place, you know, sort of way. It was funny, even now, I just even think about it, like, what did I really do next? And it's kind of a blur, you know? That's all I can think of, as a blur.
At that period at Shamrock Rovers, you had found this kind of, I suppose, this balance within your life in terms of everything was going well on the pitch, you know, and things were great. Life was kind of on this kind of plateau where nothing was going, you know, through the roof, but nothing was going down either. So everything was balanced. It was in a good space.
Yeah,
and then when you pull the rug out from, if you take off a weight one side or put on it on the other, it turns everything completely the wrong way, and you kind of find yourself out of that kind of mental space where everything was fine.
Absolutely, it was. When I think of, when you say things like that, you kind of, I don't really look back. I never really look back, very rarely. I've always just kind of always looked forward. In my house here, my medals are up in the attic somewhere. Other stuff was there. I don't have any If you come into my house, you never think I even play football. But because I don't think about what I did yesterday. I think about what I might do next week or tomorrow or whatever. But that time, you know, leaving all the lads and not being with them and not being in their company. And I know I said earlier on there, so we did have, you know, we'd have our rows, we'd have our disagreements and things like that. And I missed them, you know, because it was comfortable. It was comfortable. It was a lovely environment, a comfortable environment with people you wanted to be with, playing football, knowing that we were going to be competitive and hopefully successful. Mm. And all that was gone. You know, it was all gone so quickly. And then the uncertainty of where you're going to play, or it wasn't a nice time. Probably that's the best way to describe it. Just wasn't a nice time at all. Mm. It was just forgotten, really, you know?
And so how then did you end up at Shelburne? Was that a natural kind of, I suppose, switch for you to make?
After a while, yeah, it was sort of people had come and gone, and then I went to Shelburne. Ollie came and asked me would I go down, and I said, yeah, I'll come down and have a look. And we were playing down in, Harold's Cross when I went there first, and the place was kind of run down. It was shabby. It had nothing about it. But I felt, this is some challenge, you know what I mean? I'd love this. I'd give this a go because I love a challenge. And obviously, Shelburne was close to my heart. So I said the first thing to Ollie, I said, well, look, I'm in the building game where we had, you know, good building company. And the first thing I said, well, look, there's a wall between the players and, sorry, there's no wall between the players. There's nowhere for a manager to go to talk to people. So I wanted this built up, and I wanted it small at room here. It wasn't much, but I wanted that. I wanted the place painted. I want this clean it and everything else like that. I want the place, you know. So I said, I'll come down, do that. So that's what we did. And we set about trying to put a team together. And I wouldn't mind. We hadn't a shilling, you know. This was going to be some challenge, you know. So because I love Shelburne, I said, look, I'd love us to do well, you know. So we started off, brought a lot of young lads in, and tried to kind of replicate something like, you know, Billy Young and Jim. To a degree. It was forced anyway because we hadn't got much money, with no money. Mm. So got a few young lads in, and then...
Sorry, I should point out, by the way, that you're managing Shelburne at this stage. Sorry, this isn't a... I didn't point that out, sorry.
Sorry, I was playing myself. I didn't pick myself. Actually, I did pick myself. I had nobody else. And I didn't have to pay myself, so it was easy. But we started off with Ollie anyway, and he's great, and he's so enthusiastic. But I mean, I'm going to be intrigued to see which way this play goes about him, you know. But he's the most difficult person to work with in your life. He's brilliant because his enthusiasm for Shelburne was unbelievable, absolutely unbelievable. He would do anything for Shelburne, do anything whatsoever, because that was his club, and he just loved it, absolutely loved it. So I loved it too, but he was just way over the top, off the Richter scale, really. So. We got a place to train down CYM, tried to make it as professional as we could. Got a few players in, got a lot of young lads in. Got Freddie Davis there, Anton Whelan came along, and I was trying to get anybody I could really at the time bring in. We had Bobby Brown that played really well for us, and Parry Dooley. We got fellas in, and And we couldn't compete now with money wise and things like that. But we had fellas in, and we were, Gary Garrett was in, Paul New was in. Great lads, brilliant, brilliant lads. So set about it, and that was maybe the first trip we had to the Isle of Man. And I said, you know, Ollie said, well, we can get it, go over there for a pre-season training. I said, geez, that's great. So the lads didn't get paid. They had to take a week off to go training. They had to play matches over in the Isle of Man, which is great. Some lads could, some lads couldn't. We went over anyway, and we had a good time over there. Great pre-season, everything else. Got back here and set about then trying to get, you know, a few wins and things like that. So we were up and down. We were competitive enough. Did all right for what, things like that. Kept going. And then Tony, Tony second. I'm getting lost here. Tony, so Tony's gone blank here. The chairman comes in anyway, and he says he's going to buy Talbot Park. We couldn't believe it. I was on holidays in Wales actually. I get a phone call from Molly that we're going to buy Talbot Park. I said, go away with that. You're mad altogether. You know, I thought he was on the funny stuff, and I said, Jesus. Ollie, would you, why would you stop? Now, here's me ringing him from there. It was costing me a fortune on the phone, but I kept talking. And he's sure. Yeah. And so we're going to buy it. And I couldn't wait to get home. That's how silly it was, isn't it, really? I mean, I'm on my holiday with my kids and my wife. And all I want to do is get home and go to Talker Park, you know? So get to Talker Park then. And this is like heaven. Like we're in the real world here now. Then we could get boy a few players in and things like that, and it was great. It was just brilliant, and it was fantastic to us. Yeah. It really was fantastic.
Talk to us.
And then we go.
Sorry, I just wanted to get in there and excuse me, ask about.
Tony Donnelly was the chairman. Sorry, Tony.
Oh yes, talk to us a little bit about Ollie as well, because there's not many chairmen that have. Books written about them, and you know, all the stories that come with that, and talk to us a little bit about Ollie Byrne as well, because this is like a real character of League of Ireland history.
I mean, most certainly was that, absolutely. He, if you ask him to get something done, he really would try to get it done. We wouldn't have a penny, but he'd do a deal with somebody. Like, he say, look, I'll give you 100 tickets to the match. Now, you won't be 100 people probably going, but anyway, we'll give you 100 tickets if you give us 6 buckets of paint there, will you? Or 20 buckets of paint, whatever. And could you throw in a few brushes there as well? And could you do that? And like, it was a barter somewhere along, because we had nothing to, we had to use anything we had to get in stuff, you know? So, he goes there, and I said, oh, look, we need good training kit, you know, we need good training tracksuits to hold it. We want to look professional when we turn up on a Sunday. We don't want to have fellas in, you know, I wouldn't let the lads wear jeans, never would. So we either wear up with a short tie, or we forget about the tie sometimes, but even, you know, smart for casual. So, but then I wanted something more, because then we have a fella coming in with a red jacket or things. Like that. Yeah, yeah. So I said, look, we need tracksuits to kind of, you know, travel and things like that. Yeah, okay. And then I'd met a guy in insurance, and he rang me and he says, Pat, look, I'll pay for them, because he was a shell man as well. And that was brilliant. I got Ollie in touch with him. By the time the man was paying for the tracksuits, he was paying for a trip here. He was sponsoring the game. I'm getting sure to give him his own view, Bob. You know? But, that's the way he was. He was just a wheeler and dealer. And heart and soul at times now. I know we fell out near the end, but I never fell out with Ollie really, but when he sacked me over nothing, it was the maddest thing ever. Like, you know, because I told him to F off, and I I would do it to anybody, because what he asked me to do, I'd never do anyway as a football person. I'll tell you really what it was, fellow Ollie was. He wanted to know my team on a Friday to tell the chairman, you see. And I says, I'm not telling you, Ollie. I never tell you. But I want to know. I said, who wants to know? You or the chairman? No, he said, I want to know to tell the chairman. Now, the chairman probably wanted to know, but Ollie was using chairman as a thing for him to know. So I said, Ollie, I'm not telling you. It's on a Thursday. We're playing the Friday. And I says, I'm not telling you. I said, you'll see the team going out tomorrow, like the chairman will, and then you'll know the team straight away. So that's it. I would never do that. I said, the reason why is, if you said to the chairman, and he just happened to say to somebody, and then someone's at the match, and before we come out, someone says, he's not playing today. How do you know that? Pat said, I told Ollie, I told the chairman, you know? So I'd never put myself in that position. Mm. So it got a bit heated, and I told him, F off, you know? So we'd been going great, you know? He was red through and through, and people said, every part of him was red. There was no other club, there was nobody else. It was only Shelburne, that was it. And that was the way Ollie was. And great, I respect him for that, because I love people like that, to be honest with you. And it was one of the reasons why I signed for the club anyway, because of him.
You took over in 88, and you were kind of building, and the club was building new home, et cetera, et cetera. You win the league in 1992. Talk to us about what it was like winning the league. You're, first of all, as a manager, with a team that you'd built, but also winning it at Shelburne as well.
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was near the full circle for me, Taylor, because, you know, when you play and you win something, okay, that's an individual thing with a team. This was the final part with Jim by my side as well. Jim was great. And so we were putting a team together over a period of years, bit by bit, and then you see it coming to fruition. And you're kind of saying to yourself, that was unbelievable, you know. And you're kind of saying, well, we did that, you know what I mean, or I did that, or whatever it might be. There's always a we, because a we is most important, because everybody's involved, but we put a team together. And that, to me, was the biggest thing for me. I got the most satisfaction out of doing it for a club that my dad had loved, and all my uncles, and the saddest part was that we were supposed to go on the Monday. My dad, we won the league on the Sunday, and we were in Talker Park, and my dad slipped off a stool a little bit, slipped a little bit, and I was giving out to the dad, now, you had to drink too much, you know. We were only in probably the fourth drink. We did go on to have a good few drinks, but I said, that's it, you're going home, joking, you know. We were going to the Mansion House next day to be kind of, we got invited next day for Winter League. And I was allowed to bring a guest. And I brought my dad. I said, my dad was going to come. My mum had died at this time. And I said, Dad. And he was so looking forward to it. So looking forward to it. And I went down to collect him next day, and he was in bed. I said, Dad, you're all right. He said, don't feel great, son. He says, you're not coming. And he said, no, I can't go. And anyway, he died 8 weeks later. He died of cancer. But it was, it was a horrible. It was horrible. It was one thing I always wanted. But anyway, my only good thing about it, he's won the league and he saw us win the league. That was huge for me, you know. So that was good. But it was.
And the rest.
Yeah, it was.
The rest of your family were talking to you again, were they?
They were. Yeah, actually, I got congratulations from them and all like that. Yeah, everywhere, yeah. And it was a great time. But Ollie, he was he was brilliant. I had to take some notes. he was brilliant for players because he loved players. He loved the players because he loved the players because they were playing for his team. They were playing for his club. And he loved them because, you know, they were there and they were Sherbourne people and they were playing for Sherbourne Football Club and they were playing the best he could. And then when he was starting to win things, he was even better, you know. And I just think that's brilliant for him, you know. It was brilliant for him. He just loved it. And you have to respect that because the amount of Rovers people I came across over the years when we won the league the first time, like the outpouring of emotion and things like that, it was just brilliant. And like to be able to kind of help, do something, be involved with something that people get some enjoyment out of it, it's brilliant, you know. That's the kick I got out of it more so than anything else.
It really does.
It
really does seem like that that time, that period at Shelburne. You won the league and you won the cup then in 93. But it seems like it's that kind of really high point in your football life where everything in your life just seems to kind of come full circle back to this point where you your manager. You win the league with Shelburne, you know, and your dad gets to see it and your family, you know, this, everything just seems to tie into this kind of one period, both in your managerial life and your personal life into this kind of one kind of these few years, these moments that were at Shelburne.
Absolutely. That's a good way to describe it because it was actually, that's what I said to you about winning the league and winning it with Shelburne was, you know, as much as a personal thing, it was just, it was for a group thing, for the family, for everybody, and for everybody that helped you along the way, you know, sort of way, it was the final piece, as you say, jigsaw and all that other type of thing. It was, though. It was just a fantastic time. And I think at that time, I felt so relaxed with myself, you know, sort of way, as if, That's it done now. I'm happy. I don't need to do anything else really, you know. And I didn't really need to do anything else. I was happy in my own skin that, as you said there, Ken, it came full circle really. And we got to enjoy it at the end really to a degree, you know. Yeah. So it was good.
And then obviously you talked about the argument and the falling out with Ollie Byrne. Was it a shock to you to be fired, to be let go?
No, it was a major shock because we were just off the top of the league. We had to just win the cup and we started the league fairly okay. And actually, the thing about it is, see, Ollie was had an awful habit of interfering with things, you know, and you had to be... the one thing I was always concerned about and with all... I would never tell anybody about anybody else because, you know, I remember the trial when people go on trials, maybe to a club, and somebody would say, hey, you're going to such and such, you know, there. And yeah, and then he doesn't make it. And when he comes back, people perceive him as a failure. And people can use that whichever way they want, you know, sort of way. Mm. And so I would never put any player in that sort of situation. And that's why when I went from Shelburne, I felt okay in my own skin because I didn't let anybody down. That was the most important thing. Because I wouldn't tell someone the team because that's wrong. I wouldn't tell anybody the team until I spoke to the player, till they're going out there in that dressing room, before they leave that dressing room to go out. Only I will give the team sheet out, and everybody will know what it is. But I will never, and I never did, and I never would give a player's name to anybody because that could be terrible. It's coming from somebody else that, you know, you've made that decision and you shared it with somebody else about somebody, you know. Imagine saying, Niall Quinn, you're not playing, he won't be playing tomorrow, I'm not playing him tomorrow. And all of a sudden, Noel Quinn's getting ready and he's getting organised. He stayed in the day before. He's looking forward to the game. And all of a sudden, a fella says, oh, you're not playing today. Someone says, how do you know? I know. My uncle told me that you're not playing.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And it might sound simple, but I would never do that. I would never do it.
You leave then.
Okay. You know how exactly, you know? We were training regularly. We were training regularly. And we were down there, and this is the night he sacked me. It was a tourism night, and I think it was Tuesday night tourism. And we're down training, and we're training regularly, and lovely facilities. And I see Ollie there, the chair. I said, Jesus, great plates. I'm coming along. It's great. coming along to see the play. It's lovely to see the train and everything else. It's just brilliant. And this is after the previous week when I told F off, you know. And he said, Jesus, fair play. I mean, it's nice and reasonable on this, you know. And then he pulled me aside and said, by the way, we're leaving you in 2 years up here, you know. And here are things in there. And I says, what are you doing? I said, we're going in a different direction. I said, what direction is that down? You know, I said, because you've only gone up over the last 2 years. I said, have you organized about the team for tomorrow? Who's looking after the team for tomorrow? Do you want me to look after the team tomorrow and then I'll go if you want me to go and then I'll go? No, you're gone from tonight. Okay. So
he sat you on the spot. So no finishing the season, no nothing. That's you're gone.
No, I was gone. I don't know who we played next day. But anyway, I was gone that tourism. Yeah, end of story. Good luck. And by the time I got home here, I had more reporters ringing me. what happened? They thought I was at a knocking Ollie out or someone like that, or he was at knocking me out. So, it left it. The only thing about it did was it left it very open on me because we'd been successful. And why would you sack a manager if you'd been successful? Mm. Well, he must have done something wrong.
Yeah.
And that was the perception. But people, and it was a hard thing to knock. But anyway, just time is a healer, as they say, but that's the way it was, yeah. It was as simple as that, as you say, but nothing was ever simple with Ollie, you know?
So. Yeah. I know we're running on for a lot of time, and I've taken up a huge amount of your time today, so thanks very much for that. But I did want to talk to you about, you managed St. James's Gate, you go back to Shamrock Rovers as well, you manage at Kilkenny and you bring them up into the Premier Division. Why then did you decide that you'd had enough of football, seeing as how you'd been, you know, quite successful as a manager, you'd done well. So why did you decide to leave it all behind?
Well, I was lucky enough in that respect. I was lucky, but you come to a time sometimes, Caleb, where sometimes you've done enough. You know, you've been in football for so long. I love football. I love it. Still do. I miss not playing. I miss not kicking the ball. I love kicking the ball with my grandkids and things like that. I love it. But I had a business to run and I had a family to look after. And I decided then that, you know, I could be charging all around the country again and doing all this again. So I decided, no, I had enough. And I'd been lucky in what I'd done. And I said, well, look, just go out on your own terms and just that'll do and you're finished. And I enjoyed it. I really, really enjoyed it. I enjoyed every minute of it. And there's a club called, you've been left out there, is a club called Sacred Heart. And my son-in-law played for them. And I'd been out of management a while and the manager walked away on the week before he started the league. And he asked me would I come and look after him for a few weeks, which I said I would, which I did. And I had a chat with the lads the first day and said, but like, if he's not run up training, I won't be here, I'll go. But I enjoyed a year of that. And we went on to win a cup. And that was one of the best things I ever did in my life, would you believe, in management. And to this day, I still tell people about that one. People said, but you won the league with Shells and you won the... I know, but I got the most enjoyment out of that one. And I did it for nothing. I enjoyed it. I did it for a group of fellas that got them together. We were like ragball rowers, but we were a great, great unit, and the lads were fantastic. And I had enough. And that was, I went down that. That was the end of it, you know, so it was lovely.
Is that the one that sticks with you the most because it was doing something football for football's sake rather than, you know, something like that?
Yeah, but that was, it was one of the reasons, because I loved it. Didn't get a penny, and I didn't want a penny. That was the most important thing, because I could walk away whenever I wanted to walk away. I got a group of fellas that dedicated themselves for a year to enjoying themselves and winning a cup against Pegasus in UCD. And it was like winning the European Cup. And that's what I got a buzz out of that. And after that, I as you say, talk about full circle. I'd done it all. So that was the end of it. So
When you look back on your football career, your football life, etc., I suppose how would you describe it, and I suppose how would you look back? You mentioned earlier that you don't look back that often on it, but if I asked you to look back on it now, what would you say, and how would you describe?
I would say I was lucky. I came across some fabulous people. I got some great friends. Got great memories. I've got so much enjoyment out of the game. I don't understand why people nowadays, even junior football, are not playing the game, because it's the best thing in the world. I got to see loads of different places. But the most important thing, I got to see great fans from, you know, anywhere I was. I had great times with them. And thankfully, we were successful in that respect. And, you know, I've done everything I need to do. And my most important thing then was having played for my country, which I was so lucky. And then the other thing was getting the ground up in Tala was the best thing then after that. And that was, I know it's football related, but it was the best thing ever, was getting the stadium, because Rovers is a fabulous club, and they need to have facilities like that. And it's shown in European games that we can compete with the best of them. And that's really all, I suppose.
Yeah.
Everything else, I've had a wife and kids that, you know, back me for my football, which is fantastic. And I never had to worry about, you know, going somewhere where I need to go. I could just go, you know. It's brilliant. It's been lucky.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Well, Pat, thanks very much for joining us. It's been a long journey that we've taken the listeners on, but it's been a fantastic one and a really enjoyable one. And I think one which everybody would admit would be an incredible career for any person to have within football. And for you to shed some light on it and tell us some of those great stories is really, really appreciative. And I know the listeners as well will really enjoyed having listened to that fantastic story about your life and your football life.
I can thank you before. You brought out the best of me, because I didn't know I was going to say all that, to be honest with you. So, but I've enjoyed that talk, and I really have. And it's brought back even memories now, and I'm just swirling around in my head there thinking about them. And but thank you, and thanks to your tone as well. Thanks, so.
Yeah, not a problem. Cheers, Pat.
Thanks, Caleb. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for this special episode of Green Shoots, A History of Irish Football. My sincerest thanks to Pat Byrne, who devoted over 2 hours of his time to talk to me about his extraordinary footballing life and his love of the game. I certainly enjoyed it, and I hope you listening enjoyed it too. Our next episode out during this week will be the League of Ireland in the 1990s, as we, St. Pat's, win 4 League of Ireland titles, plus league wins for Cork City, Dundalk, Rovers and Derry, while Galway United, Bray Wanderers and Sligo Rovers find glory in the Cup. Don't forget to share the show on your social media to spread the history and heritage of Irish football, and support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League clubs. It's our heritage, it's our game. Until next time, bye for now.